Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marcourt, with a brand new episode for you guys. My guest today is Charisse O. Williams. Charisse Williams is an author, psychic tarot reader, spiritual mentor, and paranormal investigator with over two decades of experience. She's passionate about helping others tap into their intuition, explore the mysteries of the spirit world, and find power in their own healing journey. With a grounded yet mystical approach, Charisse blends soulful guidance with a love for all things spooky and unseen. And I'm so excited to talk to her. Charisse, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So you have come very highly recommended.
Yay. I love that.
Elsie Lottie was the first one who said it. And then I feel like there's been a couple other people have mentioned you too. And I'm like, I already got her on the show. I already got her.
Yay. I know you interviewed Megan and Haley recently.
Yes.
I love them. And yeah, Haley was like, and of course we mentioned you. I was like, you're awesome. Thank you. Yeah, those are all amazing people.
Yes. So how do you know everybody?
Megan and Haley, I kind of know from Instagram. I met Megan at a paranormal convention here in Ohio. And then I kind of met Haley through her. And then Elsie, how did I actually meet Elsie?
A kitty.
Oh, yeah. He is very jealous for attention. Anytime I'm giving attention to somebody else, he is
Mine too. He'll be in here any minute scratching on me and meowing, butting up against me.
Hi. Anyway, yeah. Elsie. Oh, no. I worked on a documentary with somebody and he met Elsie because he's also out in California where this is Lugosi.
I'm obsessed with Lugosi.
Anyway, that's just how I met her. And then, yeah, we've all gone on investigations together. I was out in California for the Gold Country Paracon that Elsie puts on. I'm excited for the 2026 one. Are you going to be there?
We were talking about it the other day. So yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah.
It'll be a good time.
Were you guys working on a paranormal documentary?
So I was in, let me try to get rid of him. Okay. Now I'm covered in cat hairs like the cat lady I am. anyway, I worked on several documentaries with this individual. One of which is on streaming platforms. It's Haunted Indiana State Sanatorium, which is my favorite location ever. So that is up. Unfortunately, there was a falling out. I'm no longer associated with this individual, and I don't know what is going to come of these other documentaries, but
tell us. Yeah, tell us about Indiana State Sanatorium. I don't even know about it.
Oh my gosh, you need to go. If you want to have, okay, it's been a few years since I've been, but I've been there maybe six nights total, you know, several different trips, six nights total. And it is the most active place that I had ever been to. It's also one of the creepiest places I've ever been to. I was lucky enough to be a group. I was one of the first groups to get to investigate it back in 2021. And it's this huge property out in Indiana, middle of nowhere. And there are so many layers of history to this place because initially the property and the buildings on it started as a tuberculosis sanatorium. And then that kind of got phased out. A lot of the buildings, except for there's one main, the administration building from that era is still on the property, which you can investigate. But they tore down the other buildings and they built a five-story kind of like dormitory for mental health people, patients that would stay there. And then in the 80s, and I think it closed around 2005 or something, was a nursing home. So this property has been everything. And you can investigate all of these buildings. So you can investigate the tuberculosis era building. You can investigate the nursing home. You can investigate the mental health facility. and there's just voices galore. You hear voices all the time. One of the freakiest things that's ever happened to me while investigating, I was with the group, and this was, like I said, we were some of the first people to get to go in there and investigate, which is like, that's unheard of in the paranormal when you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
Activity all night long. Our walkie-talkies kept messing up. So just all of a sudden, they would just start going off for no reason. We'd all even be in a group, nobody pushing the buttons, and they just would start to go off. So that'd been happening all night long. And we're standing in the nursing home. The walkie-talkie goes off. And Nat, one of the investigators I was with, she's like, what is going on? And you hear, and it sounded like it was literally right next to my ear, clear as day, you hear, and it sounded like an old man laughing hysterically, thinking he's having the best time of his life. I got nervous. I told everybody to shut up, and that's not, because it's on camera. This is on, it's on film. It's on somewhere. I think it might be on my YouTube channel, because I have a video like recapping it. Not my finest moment, because I screamed, not screamed, but yelled at everybody to shut up, because it like startled me so bad. But you can hear it on the audio. You hear this old man. The crazy thing about that is, during the documentary, I was interviewing somebody who actually used to work there in the 90s. And she said that in the hall where we got that was a patient there, and he liked to play jokes and tell jokes and everything. So was it that old man that was like kind of just messing with us and making the walkie-talkies go off? I don't know, but it startled me to death.
For sure. I mean, I've had that where I felt something like whisper in my ear before. And I was just talking about this on another podcast. Like you can feel like the breath almost, which is weird because they don't even have a body, but yet you feel like or like the vibration of like somebody being right there and talking about
it. It's so weird. I love it though.
Yeah. So the energies there must be really crazy, and it must differ every room you go into. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's a lot. There's actually a lot of sadness too at the nursing home, which again made sense because I had investigated there several times, and then I did the documentary, and that's where I really got to learn a lot of the history and spoke with a past employee and everything. And there was a lot of not good things that happened to some of the patients in the nursing home. And you actually do sometimes hear a woman kind of crying in the nursing home. And then the energy in the mental health dormitories is really interesting also. At night, there seems to be an entity, a spirit, who is very aggressive, and he likes to try to get people on their own. He's very angry. He's not pleasant at all. And again, it was interesting because I found out there was somebody who lived on the fifth floor, and he was nasty in life. And the other people who lived there were scared of him. He didn't like them to come out of their rooms. Like, he kind of controlled the place. And that's exactly what I picked up on the first time that I was there. And even the next morning, we kind of went through the buildings again and just kind of did a little daytime investigating. And that's what some of the spirits were giving us, was that like, yeah, at night, this is his domain, and we kind of just steer clear. During the day, we actually get to kind of come out and socialize. So very different energies there. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I love hearing about new locations.
Yeah. You absolutely have to go. If you're ever on the East Coast, Indiana State Sanatorium, it's an amazing location.
Yeah. I definitely want to check it out. All right. Let's see here. You, in your bio, it says that you have been a paranormal investigator with over 2 decades of experience. Tell me when your very first experience was.
My first experience was not with ghost hunting. I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I was at my grandma's house, and my aunt, she's only 6 years older than me, so she was like my big sister, and I was staying the night with her, and this was back in the day, and she had her walls just plastered with New Kids on the Block everywhere, so I was sitting on her bed waiting for her to come in. She was washing her face or something in the bathroom, and I'm just looking at all the posters. Next thing I know, I see that just this shadow, the outline of a person that was a little bit taller than me, walk in front of me, into stop at the window that was to my right. And I'm looking at, like, I followed it and I'm watching. And I'm like, what am I seeing? And I'm looking at it standing in front of the window. And it was almost like it could sense that she sees me. Because I could, I mean, there were no facial expressions or anything, but I could see enough that I could tell that it turned towards me. And it was this moment of, I think, both of us being like, wait, I see you. You see me. Like, what is this? And then it just dissipated. And the crazy thing is obviously I was a little like, what did I just see? But I wasn't panicked. I wasn't freaked out. I kind of just sat there like, what just happened? My aunt comes in and I tell her, I'm like, I just saw this. And she sat down. She was like, okay, I have to tell you. She's like, we've been trying to keep it from you, but grandma's house is haunted. Like, this house is haunted. And I was like, what? She was like, yeah, didn't want to scare you. She's like, but you've seen it. So like, yeah, it's haunted. And kind of growing up, I spent so much time at that house. Stuff happened all the time, shadow people all the time, knocking on the bedroom door, and you'd open the door immediately and there'd be nobody there. But it was never like menacing or anything like that. And that whole experience kind of is what propelled me to be like, well, what was that? Like, can I see that again? Can I experience that again, please? Like, what in the world was that? And that's kind of what made me, learn everything I could and read everything I could.
Yeah. Did you do any history on that house or know any reasons why it would be so active?
We do know that the neighborhood where it's located used to be farmland. It was this huge farmland. And it's interesting that my aunt through marriage, her sister, lived in a neighborhood just right next to my grandma. And she had twin boys who always talked about seeing a boy in overalls, and they called him Cut because he had cuts all over him. So we don't know if maybe there was a little boy that like had a farm accident or something. But what's crazy about that is what I first saw was a little bit taller than me at 7 or 8. So it was probably this boy that I saw. So we don't know like specific history, you know, if there were any deaths or anything like that, but it was farmland.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, so this happens when you're really young. What inspires you to actually like start becoming more interested in the paranormal and doing investigations and things like that?
So I always have to credit the original Ghost Hunters show, because up until then, I just was reading about these places and, you know, watching any sort of documentaries that I could. But back then, you know, there wasn't a lot of content out there like there is now. And so Ghost Hunters came along and I was like, wait a minute, you can just be like a normal person and do this? Like, you could just go to these places and like experience these things? Because I'd always thought, you know, you had to be a parapsychologist or some sort of professional or something. And I happened to be on Craigslist of all places and saw somebody putting a listing for, you know, we're looking for ghost members, ghost hunting team members. So I joined with their group and kind of learned the basics through them, which was a lot of fun. And I did learn a lot. And it's just so interesting to see how the field has changed so much. Because back then, you know, not a lot of places were opening up for investigations. It's kind of like you needed to know somebody who knew somebody that knew of a haunted place. And now, you know, anybody, like you can go anywhere really and investigate.
Right. And you said you're in Ohio, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the places in Ohio that you've investigated.
I feel like Ohio gets a lot of crap. People make fun of Ohio a lot. But we have so much. Like, we have a lot going on here. And I don't know why Ohio is as haunted as it is. But I mean, it really is. You can like throw a stone and find a haunted place.
I'll just throw out a couple that I've experienced, which was Mansfield Reformatory.
Yes. What was your experience
there? Or Ohio State Reformatory.
Yeah. What was your experience there?
They were so amazing there. They invited me to come. It was my husband and I. I was doing a Halloween convention in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And we had to wait till that was over. So we drove there kind of late at night. They stayed there for us until like, they let us in at like 12:30 in the morning, and we like investigated just more like a tour and experience mm-hmm. for like 3 hours, just like walking around and getting the history. They had a paranormal investigator with us, a PR person with us, and a security person with us. And that was it. And we had the whole place to ourselves and just walking around. And I can't say that I had like an experience necessarily. I mean, the whole thing was an experience, but I didn't like experience anything paranormal necessarily, but I could tell, well, I should say that's not true. There cell blocks on the bottom where you go around in like a horseshoe. It's like mm-hmm. solitary confinement area. she was like, okay, we like to do a fun thing. Like, if you should go around by yourself, like, so it goes all the way around almost in like an oval or whatever. And so I was like, oh, no problem. I can do that. So I walk all the way down one end, no problem, turn the corner. And then I start to come down the other end. And all of a sudden I just felt like everything got blacker than black in front of me. And I was like, oh, wait. And I got scared for a minute. I was like, I don't know if I should go forward or turn around and go back. And then I was just like, no, Bridget, just do it. Just do it. And so I went forward and finished, and we were all laughing about it. Oh, congratulations, you made it and stuff. But there was something that happened right there that gave me hesitation. I don't know what it was exactly. But other than that, I would say that we were there very, very short amount of time and didn't have something of note, but it's such an incredible building.
It really is. So much history. Like, and that's what I love about ghost hunting too, is I know some people get really bummed or like even downright mad when they book somewhere and they're investigating and like nothing really happens.
Oh,
but it's like, you're still getting the experience. You're still getting to see these places and learn this history. Just like to be there is an experience in and of itself. And yeah, Mansfield has a lot of that for sure.
Yeah, I agree. But I interrupted you. What was the place you were going to say?
Beale Manor is really cool. It's this Victorian home in Fremont, Ohio. That's a really great location. Prospect Place. Have you heard of that one? That's a pretty famous one. It's been on several of the TV shows, and it was one of the first locations that I got to investigate, like really investigate. And every time I've been there, I've had experiences. You hear voices or footsteps, or in the basement is the creepiest, weirdest experience I've had. It's just, well, the home itself was a stop on the Underground Railroad. So there's a lot of history with that. And the basement is one of those just, you know, like stone walls, dirt floor. When you turn off the lights, it's like darker than dark down there. And me and another investigator were sitting at the end of, it's just this long hallway, and there's a couple like little coves off the hallway. We're sitting at the very end, and we're just kind of like waiting to see what's going to happen. We're just sitting quiet. We don't have any equipment with us or anything. And kind of like you described at Mansfield, it just all of a sudden, I mean, it's already pitch black, but then it got darker. And then that darkness just kind of started encroaching on us. And we're like, what's going on here? And then it kind of stops in front of us. And we're like, okay, so that happened. And then I'm looking around and I start seeing, and I've never had this experience before or since, just little like almost twinkle lights kind of like coming down the ceiling towards us. And then kind of like stopping near our heads and kind of just like twinkling. And then they'd dissipate. And then they'd come down again and twinkle and dissipate. And I didn't say anything at first because I didn't want to like feed information to the other investigator. But then I was like, are you seeing that? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, what are you seeing? I'm like, what are you seeing? And we both said at the same time, lights. And he's like, yes. So we both were seeing these. It was the weirdest. I don't know what that was. But that was, yeah, that was a really cool experience. But Prospect Place, amazing.
What is Prospect Place?
So it's a huge home in Trenway, Ohio. And it was built by a guy named George Adams, and he was an abolitionist. And yeah, it was a major stop on the Underground Railroad because there's a river right by there. So there's a lot of history there. There is a story that supposedly one of the little girls fell off one of the balconies and died, and it was winter. And so they stored her in the basement in the kind of cold storage area. Until the ground thawed in the spring so they could bury her. So she is supposedly sometimes seen there. And then I believe it's George Adams' wife that passed away in the home also. But a lot of history.
What about, do you know about the Ridges?
Yes. Oh my gosh. That is on my bucket list. If I could get into that place, that asylum, oh, I want to get in so bad. So I guess they have kind of that building. The first floor now is like their art studio, I think. So I think you kind of can go and at least go to the first floor, but I want to go up to the creepy upper floors. Yeah, I've been there and I've seen the cemetery. Have you been there at all?
I've not been there, but I actually learned about it. Oh, just in case the listeners don't know, the Ridges, it's on Ohio State campus, right? Ohio University campus. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the buildings on the campus used to be an asylum, right?
Yeah.
And there was allegedly a murder that took place on the top floor in one of the rooms. And supposedly it's still stained.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the stain on the floor, and supposedly they've tried everything. Like, they've sanded it, they've painted over it, everything that they've done, this stain just continues to come through, like, to bleed through, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be really haunted. And the funny story is, the first time I heard about this, I was just getting my car maintenance done, and I was in talking to my service advisor, and I don't know, something came up, like, what are you doing this weekend or something like that? And I was like, oh, going on a ghost hunt or whatever. And he was like, wait, what? And he's like, what do you mean? And so I was telling him, like, what my interest is and stuff like that in ghost hunting. And he was like, oh, you know, I went to school at Ohio State, and we had this place. Have you heard of the Ridges? And I was like, no, what is that? And then he told me about it, and he told me how they snuck in there as students.
Oh my God.
And went up there. And he said, it's there, Bridget. It's there. It really is there.
Oh, I would love that. I'm not brave enough to sneak in there. And now there's probably cameras. So if I should have done it, like, you know, 20 years ago or something. But, oh, I want to go there so bad. Yeah, it's really interesting. You can at least see the outside of it if you go. And then, yeah, they have this cemetery, which is actually really sad because the cemetery is all just little grave markers with the patient numbers on it. Like, they don't even have their names on it. So it's literally just hundreds and hundreds of graves of just a patient number. And that's so sad that that happened. But yeah, it is interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I was in Columbus, everybody said that this bar was haunted. It's called the Char Bar.
Yes, I've surprisingly not been there. Like, it's so funny because I'm in Columbus and there's so much in this area that I haven't investigated. Like, I feel like I'm always going elsewhere when there's so much stuff here. Yeah, actually, and then there's Green Lawn Cemetery, which is kind of nearish, maybe, Char Bar. But Green Lawn Cemetery, it's huge, and it's one of those beautiful, big Victorian cemeteries, and that is haunted there. I've been there a bunch of times. It's beautiful, though, too, just a bunch of flowers and trees, and there's a pond and everything. But yeah, Columbus is super haunted. I should investigate in my own city more often.
Right. I know. Sometimes it's hard. But I did go to the Char Bar, and it's the basement, and that's where the bathrooms are. Mm. And it is creepy down there because it's like an old kind of unfinished looking basement, very like kind of dirty, like, and there's like tunnels under there, but they are like fenced off. But then there's like an old like piano that's kind of falling apart down there, and supposedly some people hear the keys being played sometimes. So you have to go down there to use the bathroom. So it's not totally unfinished, but at the same time, it has that very unfinished vibe and very haunted vibe. But also there's like a huge party music and like laughter and people waiting in line for the bathroom and stuff like that going on too. So it's really hard to kind of hone in on what's going on and what you're feeling.
I'm going to have to check it out.
You feel the spirits for sure, but it might be the spirits from upstairs.
A little of both.
Yeah.
Yay, it's summertime. That means more sunshine, more warmth, more time to spend outside. Summer is that time of year where we're all busy and we have lots of fun activities planned and we are just enjoying life every moment from sunup to sundown. I know for me, I love to sit by the pool, hang out on a floaty, go for a hike, sit by the beach. And while we're enjoying our summer, we also like to enjoy our favorite music and podcasts in crystal clear sound all day long. And that's why you need Everyday Earbuds by Raycon. Raycon's Everyday Earbuds are the perfect summer accessory, whether you're going hard at the gym, enjoying the sun, and taking those work calls outside, or jamming out while barbecuing to your favorite tunes. Enjoy premium audio that goes where you do. Raycon's latest model is better than ever, with a 32-hour battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. Speaking of battery, with Raycon's quick charge function, just 10 minutes of charging yields 90 minutes of battery. These earbuds also come with active noise cancellation, something difficult to find at such an accessible price point. Raycons start at just half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's everyday earbuds come in a spectrum of vibrant colors to match your summer vibe. And I think I told you guys I got the purple ones. I mean, I've never seen purple earbuds anywhere before. And if for some reason you're not loving your Raycons, they offer a 30-day happiness guarantee return policy. No questions asked. Go to buyraycon.com/ghostbunny to get 15% off Raycon's best-selling everyday earbuds. Right now, Raycon is offering 15% off their best-selling everyday earbuds only at buyraycon.com/ghostbunny. buyraycon.com/ghostbunny.
Okay, so one of the things that Elsie was telling me is that you are like a spiritual mentor. Tell me what that means.
Really, I just kind of help people and I think also spirits on their path. So whether it's living people who I kind of, you know, I teach classes on tarot and things like that and give tips on meditation and just how to connect spiritually and to connect with your own intuition and work with your intuition. I also like to try to help the spirits. So, I listen to them. I like to try to give them some energy if needed. Like actually the spirits at Indiana State, a lot of them feel very neglected and scared and sad. And so my last time there, I actually did a little ritual to kind of create this safe space bubble for them to be able to go into if they want. So yeah, just kind of, I guide the living and the dead.
Yeah, I love it. Let's talk about the tarot cards for a minute. How did you learn these?
Oh, tarot. I'm obsessed with tarot and I could talk about it all the live long day. And I use tarot for everything. Like even my husband, he was contemplating switching jobs and he was trying to decide between these two companies. And I was like, I'll pull out the cards and pulled out the cards.
I
was right. Here we are a year later with the company that he chose and everything that I said would happen with this company has happened. And I was like, see, and you doubt that your wife is psychic.
I
love
that.
Okay, yeah, you were right. But tarot cards, I got my first deck when I was 13 and I actually got it at Spencer's Gifts at the mall. And at the time I'd heard the rumor, the myth that you can't buy your own tarot deck. Have you ever heard that one?
I have heard that.
Yeah, which that's a bunch of baloney. But, 13 years old and this was a little while ago. So spirituality wasn't that talked about. It wasn't that mainstream. So I didn't really have anybody to learn from. So my friend and I, that was the one thing that we always knew was you don't buy your own tarot deck. So we went in, we each purchased the exact same tarot deck, walked out and swapped them. And ever since then, tarot was something that I, through some of my darkest times, I turned to for just clarity and guidance. And it was something that was always kind of there for me and helped me to connect to my own intuition and just to spirituality in general. And then that kind of, I went from turning to it during my darkest times to just turning to it for let's see what's going on. And then, of course, once I started investigating the paranormal, I was like, hey, I can use this to talk with spirits. So I do tarot readings a lot on investigations. I use it for everything.
That is so fascinating. So I've talked about this before, but do you use the Rider-Waite?
That is my favorite. Yeah. I have several. Okay. Well, I have many decks, but the Rider-Waite Smith one is my favorite.
It's funny because like you said, the myth, there's so many different myths. I've also heard that you shouldn't leave them in the box, that you should wrap them in a silk or something. There's all these different things. And I'm like, oh gosh, this is intimidating.
Yeah, it was. Especially as a 13-year-old, I'm like, I don't want to do anything wrong. So I did actually wrap mine in this black cloth that I had. Now, no. One of the funniest is I haven't had an Ipsy subscription in a long time, but Ipsy, the makeup subscription, every month they send you products in a little bag.
Yeah.
These bags are perfect for tarot cards. So I have my tarot deck in here. You can store them in whatever. I store them nowadays too. They come in the nice hard boxes. Like back in the day, they were the flimsy cardboard. But now they usually come in these nice boxes. So I just keep them in that or in these little pouches.
Yeah. Somebody sent me, because I saw them in a bookstore one time and I thought they were so cool. They were coffin shaped tarot cards.
Awesome. I mentioned those.
Yeah, I mentioned that I thought they were so cool, but I didn't buy them and stuff. And then a woman messaged me and she's like, I have a spiritual shop and I have those cards. I'd love to send them to you. And I'm like, yay!
I love it. Do you read with them?
Yes and no. I do sometimes. Not nearly as often as I think I want to. Mm-hmm. And then every card, I feel like I need to look it up and be like, okay, three of cups, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, or whatever, you know? So like, I'm very much still learning.
Yeah. No sweat. I'm still learning and I've been doing it forever. That's what I always tell people too. Like, steer clear of the readers that are like, oh, I don't need to learn anything else. I don't need to read any more tarot books. I don't need to read any guidebooks, because there's always something to learn. And I actually like to, I mean, even though I know what cards mean now, I like to read the guidebooks that come with the decks, because you're getting to hear a different perspective of the cards. And every now and then there may be something that the person who created the deck writes in their guidebook that I'm like, oh, wow, I've never thought of that card with that message or that perspective. Same with tarot books. There's always something to learn. And sometimes too, just my intuition is not working. And every now and then I'm like, I need to look at the guidebook real quick to kind of like jog my intuition or something. So yeah, it's perfectly okay if you got to look at that guidebook.
I will tell you a funny story though. So your, when I was doing my research for your podcast and everything, you got me like super, your website and stuff like that got me super inspired to like pull my cards out again. So I was like, oh, I'm going to give myself a reading. And you had a thing on your blog that was like the Aries, like for April or whatever, like the Aries, like reading thing. I was like, I'm going to do this right now. I gave myself the most negative reading possible. Oh, no. And I was like, no. And I was like, oh, I'll just pull another card. Maybe that'll explain why this is so ugly. And then it was like worse. And I was like, oh, no. Okay, we'll do another one. Oh, no, another one. Okay, let's just put these away.
And then we have all the cards out. We've all done that. I've done that. Or I'm like, maybe I'll just put these cards away and start over.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, this is not a good night to do this. Like, let's just put these away and let's get back to this another day, because I don't even want this in my head right now.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, I'm sorry my spread gave you a bad time.
I don't think it was your spread at all. I just think that I don't know mm-hmm. what that means. And like, I know I've talked to other people that are like, well, you know read what you want to read into the cards, and like there's lots of, you can make anything positive and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was trying every way to like make this reading a positive one, but I was like, it's just not happening. Oh, it's not happening. I know.
I'm so curious what you pulled now, but you don't have to tell me.
You know what? I don't even know if I remember what I pulled exactly. But yeah, I was like sad about it.
Yeah, those readings are never fun. There was a year that I kept pulling the Tower card for my readings, which the Tower card represents like sudden drastic changes, basically like the crumbling of your life, or like something important in your life kind of like crumbling and falling away. And that card followed me for like every single reading I did for myself. And it did end up being one of the worst years of my entire life, but it ended up good. And that's kind of one of the messages with the more like negative tarot cards, is a lot of the times, yeah, it may suck at first, but then good things can come. Like with the Tower card, yeah, something falls away, but it's so you can create like a clean foundation to build something even better. And that's what happened the year that I kept getting that card. It was the worst year of my life. But after that, like everything grew back so much stronger and better. So maybe that could be what your reading was too. Like, yeah, it sucks right now, but it's because it's making way for really good things.
Yeah. And I'm bummed now that I didn't like take a picture of what the spread was so I could see what your thoughts are on it. But you know what I did? I probably still have, is like, I have to go, like I said, research each card and what mm-hmm. it means and stuff. So I probably have that search history still on my computer and can figure out what cards. Maybe I'll send you what the cards were and see what you think of them.
Or if you want, when we get off here, I'll pull some cards for you from that spread and I'll tell you what I got for you.
Okay. All right. Well, you mentioned this already, but like intuition and reading the cards, tell me how important that is to not just like looking at the pictures and reading the book, but like trusting your own feelings mm-hmm. towards them too.
That is extremely important. I always tell people when I'm teaching tarot is, yes, you do want to know the cards. You want to learn what the traditional meanings are, but intuition trumps that, because there's times I've pulled cards and I'm like, you know, I see just a color on the card or a symbol, which makes me, you know, it triggers something in my brain. I'm like, oh, that is the message that I need to be giving. That has nothing to do with this card though. And I used to doubt myself and not share that. But then finally I was like, you know what? Like, obviously this is coming through. I'm picking up on this for a reason. So I would start to give that information to people. And that little piece of information would usually be the thing that they would respond back and be like, that was so spot on. I can't believe you picked up on that. Or, oh my gosh, I really needed to hear that. So yeah, it's very important to listen to your intuition. And I think tarot cards work so well with intuition because our intuition, our intuitive mind loves symbolism. It loves colors and imagery. And that's what's on the cards is symbols, colors, imagery. And so it really speaks to our intuition. So yes, you may be getting a specific message with the traditional meaning of the card, but it's really important to, well, what does this represent to you? So you could even try that with your next reading. The next time you pull your cards, don't even worry about the guidebook. And instead, what does this card make you feel? What does it make you think of? And kind of go off that. And then you can look at the guidebook and see, and you may be pleasantly surprised, like, oh, wow, that's kind of spot on. Or, you know, but definitely go with your intuition on it for sure. That's the most important.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I want to talk about your books, mm-hmm. The Witch's Guide to Ghost Hunting. Ooh. I was curious. I want to talk about like the paranormal investigating meets witchcraft, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who don't know anything about all of this and just think, oh, paranormal investigators, whatever, that's all witchcraft. That's all, you know, and they put a negative spin on things, even though I don't think either one of those things are negative. I think in some people's minds, mm-hmm. both of them are, yeah. if not one or the other. And I just wanted to talk about how, in my opinion, I'd like to see what you think too, witchcraft can often like go hand in hand with it and give you a deeper investigation. And can you just like talk about how to use witchcraft while you're on an investigation and that type of thing?
Yeah. So first I want to say the witchcraft, you don't necessarily need to look at it as witchcraft, because a lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't want to mess with that. But then a lot of the stuff that they do, I'm like, well, that could fall under the umbrella of witchcraft. So I tell people that when I've done conventions and stuff, they're like, well, I don't know about this witchcraft stuff. I'm like, think of it as the spiritual guide to ghost hunting then, because that's kind of more what it is. But yeah, I mean, when you think about it, when we're investigating the paranormal, we're connecting with energies that we can't see, we can't touch. We're trying to connect with it and learn about it. And that's what spirituality and witchcraft is. You're working with different energies that you can't necessarily see or feel, but you're working with them. And so it makes sense to me to kind of have both of those connected on an investigation. So I always say, while the ghost hunting equipment is great, and I love ghost hunting equipment, like the spirit box is one of my favorite things ever. I always say if I could only bring two things, it would be my tarot cards and a spirit box on an investigation. It's just as important to utilize our spiritual tools, which is intuition and our feeling and our sensing of energies. And so that's kind of what the book talks about. It goes over basics of like ghost hunting 101 for anybody that might be new to it. But then it also talks about how to tap into your own unique intuition to be able to pick up on different energies and things in a location, which I think improves investigating, because if you're following your intuition, it may be leading you to a particular room, and then you go into that room and all kinds of activity happens. Or maybe you're somebody who is very clairaudient, which is like the clear hearing, psychic hearing. And you're in a room and your ear starts buzzing. If you actually pay attention to that and notice, okay, my ear is buzzing, that may mean that there's like a spirit or an entity trying to speak to me. Let me pull out my recorder and do an EVP session right now. You know, you kind of rely on both, and there's a nice balance of the like traditional equipment with utilizing your intuition.
Tell me how you utilize tarot in an investigation. Like, how would you do that?
There's a lot of different ways to do it, but one of my favorite ways is just kind of like having a conversation. So, for example, maybe you're at a place and you know that it's haunted by a woman. Like, everybody sees this woman. There was a woman who died there, but nobody really knows much about her or her life. You can use the cards as just kind of like a conversation. So you would ask her, you know, what is your personality like? And you can shuffle the cards and pull a couple cards to see what her personality is like. You can ask, why are you still here? And you can pull a card, and maybe it's because she's sad. So we get the Three of Swords. She's heartbroken. She's sad. Well, why are you sad? What happened? Why are you sad? And you pull a couple cards to get that story. And you just kind of keep asking questions based off of the cards and the answers that you're getting. And I've had amazing conversations with spirits that way. And the cool thing with that is running a spirit box or some kind of like voice app or something. A lot of the time, the words that come through the spirit box will be mirroring the cards that you're pulling or the kind of conversation you're having. And it kind of solidifies like, oh, okay. Like, or it'll even say yes or no. So you'll be like, oh, so you're, you know, did your husband died and you're sad. And then the spirit box will say yes. Like, so it's really, it adds so many cool layers to the investigation.
Do you think if you're somebody like me and isn't very versed in the cards and their meanings, that it would hold things up too much? Is it something that a more advanced tarot person needs to only do? Or
no, girl, pull those cards out on your next investigation. For real, pull it out. Give it a shot.
Yeah, I feel like it would be fun.
It is. And the spirits seem to like it. Well, some of them don't like it because I've been called a witch very angrily on the spirit box. I pulled out my cards and was trying to do a reading. And witch angrily came through. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, well, I'll put the cards away then. Like, I don't want to offend you. And then there's been a couple times too where we're kind of having activity and then I pull the cards out and then all activity stops. So I put them away. But more often than not, when you pull the cards out, and I think it's because not everybody's using tarot cards on an investigation. And so the spirits are like, oh, wait, what are you doing? Like, and they're a little curious. They're like, well, let me come over here and talk to you. Like, what's going on with this? So kind of like amps up activity a little bit, I think. And or that could also be just, you know, you're using the cards, you're tapping into your intuition. And so maybe you're kind of just opening up your senses. So you notice the activity, the subtle activity more. But either way, yeah, they're great. Take them out on your next investigation.
I'm going to do it. It's funny though, the similarities, like with like there's people, if you pulled out tarot cards in a public place, there's people that would think witch, you know, and it's funny that even on the other side, there's people that still, you know, have those feelings still.
Exactly. It is funny.
It's kind of like I tell people all the time that, you know, not everything's demonic. Like sometimes if they were an asshole in real life, they're an asshole on the other side too. It's just the way where it is.
Exactly. Well, it's like the guy at Indiana State in the dormitory. That was one of my fears actually, was I didn't want people coming in because, you know, we knew after we investigated there that tons of people were going to start to come there like every night and investigate. And that was one of my concerns, was I didn't want people to label this spirit as a demon just because he is angry. He's not nice. He's not pleasant. But, you know, he was a living person who had problems. He had issues and he carried those over into death. And so, yeah, I don't think it's right when we label everything a demon. Like sometimes they're just people with problems or just people who were general assholes. So
yes. Yes, I agree. What do you think about people who go into locations and they are all about sending the spirits away, like sending them into the light or freeing them or things like that?
That irks me. And that's funny because actually that was somebody posted on Facebook today about that. And I shared their post and I even write about it in my book. There's a whole little section about that. I don't think it's our place whatsoever to do that. And I know a lot of people are doing that with good intentions. Their heart is in the right place, but there's a lot of reasons that I don't think it's okay. Number one, like, would you like it if somebody just came into wherever you were and they were like, okay, it's time for you. You need to go now. It's time to go. Like, no, I'm here for a reason, you know, leave me alone. But also it's just kind of, we may have ideas of where spirits go after death, but at the end of the day, we don't truly really know. So if you're sending some spirit somewhere, like you don't really know where you're sending that spirit. Mm-hmm. And then also, they're a spirit. We're living. We're in the physical. They're in the spiritual realm. So don't you think they would know when it's time to leave, or like maybe the magic doorway opens up when they're ready? Like, I don't think it's our place to create that for them. Now, I do think it's okay, like, to talk to them or try to like help them work through whatever. So maybe then they can move on their own. Now, I think that is different than if there is like a spirit at somebody's house or business or something that's like really causing problems and, you know, the family is like distraught. Then yeah, maybe kind of try to send that spirit elsewhere, tell them they can't be there. But yeah, trying to send spirits to the light, I don't think that I don't think it's our place. And quite honestly, I don't think that we can do that. I don't think we have that ability.
Yeah, I read a story about this haunted location that I think is closed now, but that I kind of wanted to go to. And I read this reporter's story about how she went with this group of investigators and they were freeing all these spirits and they were opening the windows and they were sending them off to the light and she could actually see physical like darkness, like go out the window and stuff. And they did all this like good work for the evening. And I was like, wait, you guys were doing what?
Right.
Back up. Hold on. Who were you with?
Maybe that's why the location closed. They got rid of all the spirits. So there was that.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that you can absolutely send energy away, at least even just temporarily. So who knows? Maybe they temporarily sent some spirits away. But as far as like crossing over, I don't think that that's a thing.
Yeah. There was something interesting that I saw that I read about on your site. You were talking about fragmented souls, and I never really heard anybody talking about this before, and I thought it was really, really interesting. Can you tell people what that is?
Yes. So I call it fragment hauntings, and I think that this actually makes up majority of the hauntings that we are experiencing. So if you kind of think of hauntings as a spectrum where we have residual hauntings, which is basically just a recording of an incident, or it's like an imprint of energy. You can't interact with it. You can't ask it questions because it's not going to respond. It's basically like watching a video on, you know, you can't interact with the movie and the actors. They don't know that you're watching them. And then on the other end is the conscious hauntings, you know, the spirit, like we were just talking about, the spirits who are just stuck. And it's like the entire spirit, the entire being. These are conscious. They, if they're able to, they can interact with you. They can answer questions, make noises, and what have you. Fragment hauntings, I think, kind of fall a little bit in the middle. And the idea comes from shaman beliefs of soul fracturing or soul splintering. And that is when we go through something traumatic, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be something like super life-changing traumatic, just something that's traumatic, maybe even just extremely embarrassing, part of our energy body kind of fractures off. And it's a way to kind of preserve the energy body as a whole. And it's not much different than, you know, when somebody goes through something traumatic and sometimes they kind of lock those memories away and they can't really access the details. And it's just kind of like this, that incident is just locked away in your brain. It's kind of fractured off from your main consciousness. It's the same thing, except with the energy body. And with these types of hauntings, that energy fragment, it's conscious in the sense that, you know, it knows that it exists. And if you ask it questions, they can respond. But they're basically stuck in the frame of mind or in the energy of whenever that trauma occurred, that fragmenting occurred. And so that's why sometimes you'll ask them, you know, like, well, what year is it? And they are like, what are you talking? Like, it's, you know, 1995, or, and they don't know anything that has happened since that fragmenting. And the crazy thing with that is that you can still be alive. Like, that person doesn't have to be dead. I use the example of, you know, maybe if you went through something traumatic as a child, a piece of your energy body could have fractured off in the home that it happened in. That little energy body of yours could still be in that home, haunting that home. And you're alive, living your life, you know, 30 years later, and you're moved states and everything, but this little piece of your energy is still at this location. But yeah, I think that that is most of the hauntings. And this is where it gets so crazy too. All these topics, I love it. They're all so layered, because it can be, you can retrieve that energy piece back. Once your energy body and your mind feels safe to kind of incorporate that again, you can call that back. And I think that that can explain a lot of hauntings, where it's like, it's super haunted all the time, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, where did that spirit go? It could be that the source energy kind of called that piece back. And so now that piece isn't there to be haunting the location anymore. And it can happen. You can be in another lifetime. You can be in a past life, future life, and still call back these pieces from other lifetimes that you've had also.
That is so fascinating. And I've never heard anybody talking about it either.
Me neither. That's why I'm like, I want to talk to everybody about it. I'm like, let's talk about fragment hauntings.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so, I mean, especially the part about it could be like your live part of you from childhood or whatever, and you're still alive and you're over here doing your thing. Like, that's just like, right? For me.
Like, you even like, go, like, investigate yourself. Like, that's so, yeah, it's a lot.
I wish, like, But I feel like we don't even know, though, that we left it there.
Yeah.
You know, so we couldn't even be like, oh, let's go investigate that thing that happened to me, you know, whatever. But I wish we did know. I mean, it's just so interesting to think. And it just shows, too, how much we don't know about all this stuff and how important it is for everybody to, like, put theories and ideas out there, to be talking about it and investigating and doing things to try and, like, figure it out.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't know. We don't know it all.
Yeah. It's kind of like what I was thinking, too, when they're freeing the spirits and things like that. I'm like, you don't know. I feel like in just the way I look at it is that I like to, or at least the way I like to believe, is that the spirits can go back and forth. Like, they can be here and they can be communicating with us in some hotel room or whatever, but they can also, like, go back to wherever they are doing their happy thing that they're doing.
Yes.
I feel like they can move around. And so I don't necessarily think of them as being stuck in that place. Maybe some of them, but like, I like to think that, like, if it's grandma visiting, they just came to, like, say hi or check on us, but she's going to go back and, like,
that's what I think,
grandpa, and hang out, you know?
That's why I think most hauntings are these fragment hauntings. Cause I think generally we do move on to a better place. We move on to wherever it is that we're supposed to go next. But the thing with the fragment hauntings is, you know, if somebody, for instance, was murdered, their energy might've fragmented away right before they got murdered. So that fragmented energy may not even know that they died. Like, and that's where you kind of get the confused spirits, is because they're like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't die. Like, what do you mean? Because they just have the memory up to the very point of that moment and nothing after.
Yeah.
And I think that also makes me feel a lot better about the child hauntings, like in the children ghosts. Cause I'm like, there's no way. I don't think, you know, I mean, I believe in God, and I don't think God would let little children's spirits just, they already went through something terrible and you're going to make them be just kind of stuck in this space. And so I think a lot of that is kind of that fragment haunting. I don't think it's the entire child's spirit. I think it's just this little piece that broke off, and that's what we're interacting with.
Yeah. So interesting. So there's another book that you wrote. It's The Witch's Guide to Haunted Objects. Mm-hmm. And first of all, do you collect haunted objects?
Well, funny story. I feel like I need to, like, make a second edition of that book so I can include this story in it. Because after that book had been published, I acquired 2 antique art prints. And after that, and I can tell you that story if you'd like, but after I got rid of those, my husband, my son, my entire family was like, you're not bringing anything haunted into this home ever again. And I was like, I agree. I will not.
I do want to hear what happened.
So I actually utilized a technique that I wrote about in The Witch's Guide to, it might be, I can't remember which one it's in, haunted objects or ghost hunting. And it's using a pendulum to find a haunted object. And so basically you just go into, like, a antique store or whatever, and you set the intention that I want to find a haunted object. And you can utilize the pendulum to kind of, like, swing in the direction that you should be walking and kind of zero in on the object. And so that's what I did. So good news is my technique works, because I got these 2 haunted art prints and I brought them home. And at first it started out okay. I kind of had them sitting over here in my space. And I let them sit here for a couple days to just get comfortable before I started, like, interrogating them. And then I would sit down and do some, you know, investigating with them, running the spirit box, pulling some cards. And it started out okay. Nothing too crazy. I got, like, a couple names come through, an age. And then things kind of started to get weird. And it seemed to be focused on my son, who was 12 at the time. 12, 13. So this was actually just a year and a half ago. And I can't remember it, because there was a series of events and I can't remember now exactly which happened first. He broke his toe and we're like, okay. And we even joked, oh, maybe it's the spirits that broke, you know, made you break your toe. Then it was like 2 weeks later, he was playing on the headset and he swung his arm up and hit the glass lamp and cut his finger, bleeding everywhere. He had to go get stitches. And then it was like a couple weeks later, he got the worst flu he's ever had. Like, he's never been so sick. Like, I almost took him to the hospital because I was worried about his fever. And then, so at this point, we really are like, okay, there's something happening. The final straw was that he broke his arm. And this was all within like 6-8 weeks time span that all of these things happened to him. And in between all that happening, I was still kind of doing the investigating. And it just clearly something switched. So I don't know if it was two different spirits, like one kind of more friendly attached to one object and then something darker attached to the other. I'm not sure. But, and I think I have it on my YouTube because I recorded it, and it basically was saying that it wanted pain. It wanted like blood. It wanted pain. And I was like, okay, we're done. So I put them in a garbage bag and I drew like a protective sigil on it. And I put them out in my shed, cleansed my house, cleansed my son, did protection, finally found somebody who wanted them. Cause I didn't know what to do with them. I'm like, I don't want to just give them to anybody. You know, I don't want to like burn them or throw them away. Cause also I wasn't sure which object had the more negative spirit or both of them. I don't know. But I ended up finding somebody. She does paranormal investigating. She collects haunted objects. My criteria also was that they couldn't have a child in the house because clearly whatever this was fixated on my son. And so got rid of them, did another cleansing, protection of my home, everything, knock on wood, has been fine since then. But yeah, I mean, there were some other things, you know, like I heard a voice and stuff. Like it was, and at first I was like, oh, that's nothing too crazy. Like, oh, I heard a voice. But I was like, yay, they really are haunted. But then, yeah, it got very dark and got rid of those. And I will never own a haunted object now.
What did the paintings look like?
They were like two little girls with like curly hair. One had like dark curly hair and one was like blonde. And the one painting, and I think that this was maybe the one that was like a little, was titled Sisters. And I looked it up one time and I forget what year they're from. They're from forever ago, but it's like a series of art prints that this artist did of these like little kids. And then the other one was a smaller one and it was by a different artist, but it had the same two little girls on it basically with like the dark curly hair and then one with blonde short curly hair. And it's really creepy because one of the dolls I talk about in the book is, we call her Betty, and she was a doll that looked like these paintings. She had the dark curly hair, and that doll was crazy. Got rid of her, sent her to a couple friends. They love her. They have had problems with her. I'm like, I just don't think haunted objects like me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question. Do you believe people should collect haunted objects?
I mean, yes and no, because there's lots of people who do collect haunted objects and they don't have crazy problems. You know, they'll have activity and things stir up, but nothing too crazy or, you know, nothing too like life altering. I do think that, you know, we, at the end of the day, we don't know what we're bringing in. I even set the intention of nothing malicious to be brought into my home, and clearly that didn't work. And I think it's kind of the same, you know, when we're dealing with humans, we could tell some crazy person, like, I don't want you in my home, but if they want to come into your home, they're going to come in whether you ask them nicely or not, you know? And I think that's kind of the same thing with haunted objects. So I think it is important to know you could be bringing something not pleasant into your home, and you need to know what are you going to do with that object? How are you going to cleanse and protect your home and yourself? So just, I always tell people, be careful because you don't necessarily know what you're actually getting.
Yeah. When you were writing that book, did you hear of a like super crazy story about haunted objects or anything like that? Like something that you go like, this is a warning story.
There's a lot of them in there. And again, I just don't know if haunted objects don't like me, because one of the other crazy stories in there is from McIntyre Villa, which is in Kansas. Which that's a crazy location too. You should go there. Put that on your list. McIntyreville. It's actually, have you heard of the Sally House?
Yes.
The Sally House is right down the street from McIntyre Villa. And it is, I think it was like 1889, huge Victorian home. The woman who owns it, Stephanie, she's hilarious. She's amazing. And actually the documentaries that I was working with this person with, we were filming with two other investigators at McIntyre Villa. And I'm so bummed that I don't know what he's going to do with this footage, if anything, because it was such a great investigation. But at the house, there is a marionette doll, an antique marionette doll made with actual human hair. And Nat and I, the other investigator, like we were like, there's something with that. And Stephanie's like, oh, really? Like, I don't know. I haven't really experienced anything. There's so much happening in this house. You know, I don't know if there's anything with that. We're like, no, there absolutely is. And throughout the night, it just kind of kept coming back. Esmeralda is what she calls the doll, kept coming back to Esmeralda. And it involved mirrors also, because the case that Esmeralda is in is lined with mirrors. And then we realized every single room in that house has mirrors, including this one little, I think it was a closet, but she kind of made it into this small room, a scrying room. And so we did scrying with the mirrors. Weird things happened there. Yeah, that doll is a creepy little thing. Definitely haunted.
Yeah, I try and stay away from haunted objects. People have tried to give me something or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm good. I remember I was at the Washoe Millionaires Club in Virginia City, mm-hmm. and they gave me like this giant nail that had like an old nail. And I was like, oh, thanks. And I literally left it in there on a window seal. I was like, I am not taking anything home from this place.
I don't know. I do still have, like, I have dirt from the Devil's Den at Gettysburg. So I do have a little vial of that. I think that might be the only like haunted object that I still have, but I've never had any problems with that. I'm trying to look around and think.
Yeah.
No more haunted objects for me though.
Yeah, I did a TV show a long time ago called VH1 Celebrity Paranormal, and they took us to this like old manufacturing, like a textile mill on mm-hmm. some island in off the coast of Maine. And I brought home the time card from somebody, because all the file cabinets were still there, all this like stuff. Wow. And I brought home this time card, and I just didn't feel right about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't like having that either, even just something as small as that.
Yeah. It holds on to stuff. Even if it's not like an active haunting, there's still so much energy that's, you know, put into these objects that if you're sensitive at all to it, like you can feel it. And you know, some stuff feels just not good.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
You spoke about this a little bit already, but using the pendulum, you were talking about using it to find haunted objects in a thrift store or whatever, but you also talk about how you can use it to locate spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you're at a location, you know, you can kind of either look for a specific spirit, or you can kind of just utilize it for maybe if you want to find kind of the soft spots or like a thinning of the veil. Because everywhere we are, there's spots that are a little thinner. You know, when you walk, even just like in the woods or at the grocery store, even I've walked through spots where I'm like, ooh, like that feels a little different. Like where you get kind of like a little like, ooh, a little lightheaded or something. Or maybe you do hear the ringing in your ear. Like those are good indicators that like maybe you're in a little bit of a soft spot here. So you can use the pendulum to help you locate, you know, the soft spots. And maybe that's where you want to start your investigation or conduct the investigation. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. You can either hold the pendulum out and have it kind of swing in the direction that you should be going. Or you could kind of go room to room and have, you know, have it spin yes for if there's a soft spot in this room, or spin no to let you know. Or, yeah, to find, like, a specific spirit, like, where might this spirit be? And you can use it that way also.
I don't use a pendulum usually, but I feel like that's another thing I could add.
Yeah. It's kind of like the dowsing rods, honestly. So, like, because some people really like dowsing rods and not pendulums and vice versa. Because, you know, you can use the dowsing rods the same way, like, cross once you enter into, like, a soft spot or something.
I just got my first pair of dowsing rods. I barely even had a chance to use them. And one of the reasons I've stayed away from those two things is I just feel like there is the ability to manipulate it on our own, mm-hmm. even if we aren't trying to. Like, just, you know, so that was the reason why I kind of stayed away from them. But I feel like with the dowsing rods, that's very difficult to do because of how they spin in those handles.
Yeah, and you can keep them
straight. Impossible.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, so I'm still just sort of like, I don't know, am I comfortable with these or not comfortable with these? Am I manipulating them?
Yeah.
Am I trying to get them to tell me, you know, what I want them to do? Over here.
That happens a lot. Yes. Oh, like, I want to go over here. Yes, the spirit's over here. A good way with that, though, is to practice with your dowsing rods of, like, ask a question that you know, like, is my name Bridget? And try to move them to know. And you feel what that feels like to give an incorrect answer, to kind of force it yourself. So like kind of try to keep them still like you're actually using them, but also kind of manipulate them a little bit to force a wrong answer, and then do it again with the correct answer. So you can kind of learn like, oh, that this is what it feels like maybe when I'm manipulating it or forcing an answer. They can be tricky. There's absolutely a ton of user error. I don't use my pendulum too often. I like to use it for cleansing the energy more than anything. But yeah, they're fun.
Yeah. Wait, you use the pendulum to cleanse energy?
Yes. Oh, they're great to cleanse everything. You can cleanse yourself. You can cleanse your tarot decks. Basically, like, you'll just hold it over an object. And I like to start it spinning counterclockwise. And then I'll kind of hold it still to try to not move it. And once it stops moving, the energy has been cleansed. And it's a great way. I use it for my tarot decks a lot. I've used it for investigations, like when I'm feeling too much, like there's heavy stuff around me or whatever, I'll kind of just like hold it over my own head or like over kind of near my heart and cleanse the energy that way. Or I've done it on other people too, on investigations when they start feeling a little funky. I'll use the pendulum to clear their energy. Yeah.
I didn't even realize that you could do that.
Mm-hmm. It's super handy.
Cemetery snow.
Yes.
Tell me about this. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. So you've heard of graveyard dirt, right? Or cemetery dirt. Have you heard of that?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, that is something that is used in witchcraft. And it's basically kind of, there's different places that you can get it from. You can get it from the gate of the cemetery, or some people, if they're doing like negative work, they may gather the dirt from the grave of like a known murderer or something like that. But the idea is that you're gathering the dirt for that particular energy, or maybe you are working on a healing, and so you gather some dirt from the grave of a doctor or something. Or if you're just wanting to utilize it, and I know I'm talking about dirt and you talk about snow, which I'll get to that in a second, but maybe you want to utilize the dirt just to kind of help connect you to the spirit realm. So you may get dirt kind of near the gate, liminal space of the cemetery, and utilize that on your ghost hunts. You can even just like hold it. You can kind of just touch the dirt, and it kind of is helping you to connect to the other side. You know, the cemeteries are this kind of gateway to the other side. And so by utilizing something physical from that, it kind of can help put your physical self into the spiritual realm. And snow is the same way. I actually like snow better than the dirt, because snow is water, and water itself is very intuitive and emotional. But you would do it the same way. You know, I like to gather the snow in a bottle from the gate of the cemetery, and I put it in a spray bottle, and I'll spray it over my aura before I do a ghost hunt, or if I'm doing a tarot reading to connect to a spirit. And it just kind of is a way, again, to kind of align your energy with the energy of the other side.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we don't have very much snow around here. Any? No snow. But yeah, the cemetery. After I said I didn't know about cemetery dirt, I do know a little bit. I do know about like some like spells, mm-hmm, or witchcraft and stuff, adding a little bit of cemetery dirt and like putting it in a bag and wrapping it up and burying it somewhere else, kind of.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that you can do it. Yeah, I mean, you can put it on, like, rub it into a candle and then burn the candle. Yeah, there's tons of different ways to utilize it.
Or, like, isn't there something about, like, taking a spell and burying it at a cemetery? Is there something like that?
Yeah, that's pretty common, too, for a lot of people.
So, yeah, after I said, no, I don't know, then I was like, oh, wait, but I have heard of those things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of similar. But, yeah, no, I have not heard of those, like, taking some of it and having it with you for, like, an investigation, mm-hmm, or anything like that.
I like the water the best, 'cause like I said, it's easy to kind of just spritz it over your energy. And, I don't know, it kind of helps you blend in with the spirit world a little better, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like the snow is something where people aren't going to question you about like why you're taking it. If you're like taking a little shovel,
right?
And like digging up cemetery dirt, somebody might be like, excuse me.
Yes. That's another reason I like it better too. You're not like disturbing the grave. You're not disturbing the, you know, the land. You're just kind of taking a little snow and moving on.
yeah, exactly. Okay. Some roundup questions. Yes. Scariest paranormal place you've ever been?
Indiana State Sanatorium, for sure.
And then you've already answered this, but I'll, just for the roundup purposes, favorite paranormal tool beside yourself?
Tarot or spirit box.
Oh, the tarot. Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. Okay. Best evidence you've ever captured?
Ooh, talking about child spirits, it's probably, it was years ago, again, one of the first investigations I was on, and it was with a legit team, and we were at a home that they talked about seeing a little kid, and there was also like an angry man there or something. And my boyfriend at the time, we were investigating one of the bedrooms, and we were sitting there, nothing was really happening, and I had the recorder going, and this was, again, some time ago, so we were using like the actual like tape recorder. So we didn't listen to it until, you know, like the next day when I had to plug it into my computer and play it back. So we didn't hear it at the time, but nothing was really happening. And so we, you know, get up and we say, all right, let's go to the next room. And on the recording, you hear clear as day, a little kid say, why are you leaving? So sad. So hard. I heard that. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, that is the saddest thing I've ever heard. So that's probably like my, when I think of evidence, like that always comes to my mind.
Yeah. And then paranormal place that you haven't been yet, but are dying to go to.
Well, the Ridges. I would love to go to the Ridges like we were talking about. Overseas, the Paris Catacombs. I would love that. And yes. then here, I've been wanting to go. The Southwest has been calling me. Like, I want to go out to Arizona out there so bad. So like really anywhere out there.
Okay, maybe Tombstone or Bisbee,
I would
Jerome.
Love yes. And I want to go to Sedona just for like the spiritual aspect of it. Yeah, I want to go everywhere out there.
Oh, yeah. And they have those vortex there too.
Oh, yeah, I want to feel that. I want to see what that's like.
Yeah, so interesting. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Tell everybody listening how they can buy your books, take class, like all do all the stuff.
Yay. Thank you for having me. And my books are on Amazon, so you can either just look up The Witch's Guide to Ghost Hunting or The Witch's Guide to Haunted Objects. And then my website, CheriseWilliams.com. And then I'm active on Instagram and TikTok, which is CheriseWilliams.xo. And any classes or anything that I have, tarot readings can be booked. It'll all be, information will be on my website, or I'll post about it.
Awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures, and I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to my podcast so you're always the first to know when a new episode is out, and follow me on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram and at Ghost Bunny Podcast on YouTube. And I'm working on that Patreon. Thank you everyone for being patient. Bye guys.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.